It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hall of Fame coaches, national champions, lottery picks, the best minds in basketball. Welcome into the Sidelines with Evan Daniels.
What's up, college basketball fans? Welcome back to the Sidelines podcast. I'm your host, Evan Daniels, college basketball insider at FS1, as well as the director of basketball recruiting at 24/7 Sports. Today's episode, I'm going to bring on Fox Sports producer Conrad Company, and we're going to dive into a couple big topics around college basketball, including that Duke-Virginia game this past weekend. We're going to talk Anthony Edwards, the nation's number one player that just committed to Georgia, and we'll talk a little Washington and Mike Hopkins. Before we get to that, I want to make sure that you are supporting the Sidelines with Evan Daniels podcast. The best way to do that is to shoot over to Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button for me. Leave a rating. Leave a review. Those things are extremely helpful. You can also shoot me a note over on Twitter or Instagram. The handle is at Evan Daniels.
It's time to go Minute with Evan Daniels. Send it in, big fella.
Now I want to bring in a close friend, Conrad Company, to help guide this conversation. Has worked his way into a co-host of this show and enjoy having him on. What's up, Conrad?
Hey, man. How's it going? How you doing today, E? Big day for you, man. First live commitment. How was that?
It was fun, man. It was a lot of fun. I spent Monday morning in Atlanta at Holy Spirit Prep for Anthony Edwards' college announcement. And, the kid... Such a talented kid, and for Georgia to be able to keep him at home was a big deal. So it was fun to be there.
I knew. I texted you this morning. The first thing that came to me is when he pulled out the baby. I did not see that coming for how he was going to announce it. But you know what? Kids are becoming even that much more creative with how they announce these sort of things. So let's get right off the rip with it, though. He decides to stick with Tom Crean in the hometown Georgia Bulldogs. Did you see this coming, or where did you see him ending up?
Yeah, I mean, I made a prediction for Georgia on last Tuesday, and I admittedly at that time didn't know where he was going. But I think that the location and proximity to home was a big deal for Anthony. This is a kid that is extremely close with his family. His sister just had a baby, and the nephew is the one that you saw in the commitment video. It's funny because I asked those guys, how is he planning to announce? Is he going to do the hat thing, or how is he going to do it? And that was his idea from the beginning. And I thought it was pretty cool. We've seen all kinds of commitment type announcements. I've never seen one with a baby. So that was pretty cool. But I did see it coming maybe over the last couple weeks. I think when he reclassified from 2020 to 2019, most expected that it would be Florida State. And he took a visit to Georgia, I think about 10 days after he announced that he was reclassifying. It was an official visit. Well, Georgia just got him on campus quick. They were very aggressive in their pursuit of him. But I think that location and proximity, plus Tom Crean's pitch, really factored in here. If you watched the announcement, Conrad, he brought up Victor Oladipo and Dwayne Wade, and that was Georgia's pitch. Tom Crean obviously coached and helped develop those guys, and that was their pitch to him from the beginning. I'm not saying they're the same players, but their playing style is similar. They're both big guards that really excel with the ball in their hands. And that was Georgia's pitch, and Anthony Edwards was all about it. And so I think between that and the proximity, Georgia was able to win out.
Yeah, and so he committed to Georgia and Tom Crean. Now, he is the number one shooting guard in the class in 2019. He looks like a very smooth shooter with range, loves the pull-up game, uses his athleticism to get to the rack. And he mentions the likes of Dwayne Wade, Victor Oladipo in your interview with him. Now, do you think that more recruits think like this, where a certain coach basically coaches up these certain type of athletes this way, and that determines where they're going to go?
Well, I think every commitment in kids to recruitment is a situational basis. In this particular case, Anthony bought into that pitch and enjoyed that pitch. But I think every recruitment is different, and each recruitment comes down to something different. It's, you know, it's just like choosing a restaurant, Conrad. Like, there's certain things that you like in a restaurant that maybe I won't. You know what I mean? So I think it's a situational basis, and you know, he really wanted to stay close to his family and friends. It's not just his family too. He's really close with his trainer, Justin Holland. He's really close with his AAU coach, Winfred Jordan. There's a community around him, and he's only going to be about an hour and a half away from them. But certainly the pitch with Wade and Victor Oladipo really factored in here. And Conrad, I don't know if you've seen highlights of this kid, but he is a heck of a prospect.
Oh yeah, no, that's why I spent some time this weekend when I knew that you were doing the announcement on Monday morning, and I kind of went back and watched today, and his game is very smooth. I mean, that's for sure. And like you said, I mean, it's so funny. I know we keep bringing up Dwayne Wade and Victor Oladipo, but people didn't know what their ceiling was when they were playing for Tom Green back in the day. What do you think Anthony Edwards' ceiling is?
Well, it's high. You know, we have him number one overall in the top 247. He's number two in the 24/7 Sports composite rankings, which is all of the ranking service combined. But I think the reason I think he's the best prospect, it starts with the physical tools. He's 6'5", 215 pounds, long arms, tremendous athlete, quick off his feet, quick laterally, all the physical tools for a shooting guard prospect. He's a three-level scorer. He can get to the rim and finish through contact. He can get to the rim and punch on you. He's really creative with the ball in his hands, Conrad. So, you know, he's able to create space. He's got a tight handle, and he can pull up from mid-range. And then his shot mechanics and his jump shot has really improved over the last year. He's shooting at about a 38% clip from three during his senior season, and his jump shot has really improved. And, you know, I think the one or two areas that you'd harp on with him right now are conditioning and staying locked in on defense. He actually has a potential to be a tremendous defender, but it's not an area that he's ever really fully focused on. I think maybe the scariest thing about Anthony Edwards is he's not even close to reaching his full potential. There are still so many ways that he can improve, and he's already this good. The other thing is, and I'm not a huge comparison guy, as you and I have talked about on here before. The guy that we at 24/7 Sports have kind of been comparing to, and don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say he's going to be a top three player in the NBA, but he plays kind of similar to James Harden in a sense that he's really good with the ball in his hands. He's really good creating off the bounce. He's in ball screen situations. He's really impressive. And he's known for his scoring and his athletic ability, but when he wants to be, he has tremendous vision and can really pass. So there's tremendous upside here. I think he's the favorite to be the number one pick in the 2020 draft. Obviously, that's a long ways away, and you know, James Wiseman maybe has something to say about that. But I think this kid is a tremendous talent, and it's a game-changing recruit for Tom Crean.
Yeah, now speaking of the likes of James Wiseman, it seems like more and more schools that weren't grabbing top 10 recruits. I mean, Washington has a top 10 recruit. Now Georgia, Memphis. Do you see kids are going to start going to schools that aren't naturally like the Arizonas, the UKs, the Dukes, the North Carolinas in the top 10?
That's a good question. It's actually one that I've been getting a lot lately. I think it's similar to what we were just discussing. I think it's situational. I think it depends on the kid. You know, we've seen the Ben Simmons go to LSU and the Markel Fultz go to Washington. But then we also see Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett go to Duke and Ashton Hagens go to Kentucky and E.J. Montgomery go to Kentucky. So, you know, the Blue Bloods are still getting players. There's always going to be a couple guys that go off the beaten path and want to stay close to home or have a relationship that leads them to a certain school, or there's a certain pitch that they really liked. And you know what I always say about recruiting, Conrad, is it really is relationship-based. And a lot of times with proximity, you're allowed to build a relationship earlier, and maybe a deeper type of relationship. So, you know, location obviously is a factor in a lot of recruitments, but the relationship, I think, is what matters most. And a lot of times it's a relationship with an assistant coach or a relationship with a head coach.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And now just switch gears a little bit and probably to go to something that we'll probably never see again when it comes to recruiting, with the Duke Blue Devils this year having the top three overall recruits from last year's class. And, man, they played a hell of a game against Virginia this weekend. I know personally, I thought Virginia had a shot, and it came out pretty quickly. They did not. What did you take away from that game at Virginia this weekend?
Well, what's crazy is if Duke shoots the ball the way they did against Virginia, they're unbeatable. Now, they're not going to shoot the ball like that every game, and it's funny, actually. I can't believe Virginia kept it as close as they did at the percentage that Duke shot the basketball. I mean, it was insane. R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish combined for, I think it was 11 of 16 from three, or 11 of 15 from three. I mean, that's silly. And it was a really impressive performance on the road. I think anybody that watched that game walked away thinking they are the overwhelming favorite to win it all. Now, Duke's not going to come out and shoot the basketball the way they did like that every game. And there's going to be games they're going to have to grind it out, and they're going to have to win other ways. But that was a really impressive performance. And I think Duke has the most upside of any team in the country. I've been saying that for really since the beginning of the season, and I fully believe that. I think that their upside is higher than everyone else's. And this is a really good basketball team led by some sensational freshmen.
Yeah, Evan, I thought Virginia was actually going to make Duke grind this one out, which would lead to them getting a big win at home. But it was the exact opposite. It was almost like a barn burner from the start, like you mentioned. The hot shooting from R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish really took Duke out the lead at first. And it wasn't anything like the first game. Now, how much do you put on Trey Jones's impact that Duke really got out that hot start as well? Because the first game, people forget, he didn't play against Virginia.
Well, I love Trey Jones. I've said from the beginning of the year, I think he's the most important piece to their puzzle, just because I think he sets the table. And them beating Virginia at home without Trey Jones was extremely impressive. But Trey Jones came out and played 40 minutes against Virginia the other night. 13 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. He just does a great job of setting the table. And he's very similar and impacts the game very similar to the way that his brother his brother Tyus did when he played at Duke. And I just think that Trey Jones has such a calming impact on the game for his team. And it's not just the offensive end. The way he puts pressure on the basketball is extremely impressive. And I think with him on the court, Duke is a significantly better basketball team. And I know that we see the sensational dunks and athleticism and field-type plays from Zion Williamson, and we see the scoring from R.J. Barrett and the catch-and-shoot jump shots and the oozing with potential from Cameron Reddish. But I maintain that Trey Jones is such an integral part of this Duke basketball team and arguably the most important piece to that puzzle.
Yeah, Evan, you know, I didn't want to bring it up, but now that you mentioned Zion, have you seen a player like this where you didn't know where he was going to fit in or how well he was going to translate to the college or the NBA ranks? And his progression this year, have you seen anyone progress like you have with Zion over this past year?
Yeah, I mean, there's been plenty of guys that I would say progressed in a major way. Even like, you know, you could look at a guy like Ja Morant from what he accomplished last year to this year. He made a huge jump. But I get where you're going with this. And obviously Zion really did make a significant move from last year. I think I could take a little blame on this, and he was – better than I realized even then looking back. He's obviously now in much better shape. And I wasn't sold in high school if he was going to be able to bully guys the way he can at the college level. But just his athletic ability is just so impressive. It's the way he glides through the air, his body control is insane, Conrad. The way that he can control it in the air and finish at the rim, and he's just so quick. That block he made on DeAndre Hunter in the corner was insane. Oh. Now, I have no idea why DeAndre Hunter didn't ball fake and one dribble pull up or try to go get to the rim. But, I mean, that was a ridiculously athletic play. One of the more athletic plays I think I've seen on a basketball court. I mean, that was insane.
That actually got me to stand up out of my chair when I saw that happen. And he is. I mean, everything that he does, it's like when you're sitting there watching him play and you're like, okay, well, what is he going to do next? And then he pulls that out of the bag. But I think for me, the thing that really steps up about his game is he is shooting 70% from the floor. Like, how is he so efficient in what he does at everything?
Well, he's taking very high percentage shots pretty regularly. This is a guy that's I'd have to look at stats on Synergy, but I can't imagine he's taken many shots outside of 2 feet. Obviously, from a shooting standpoint, he's shooting 30.2%, which honestly is actually better than I would have guessed coming into the season. He's 13 of 43 from three. He did hit that catch-and-shoot jump shot from three against Virginia. But you're right. And it's not just the efficiency. It's the multiple ways that he impacts the game. It's not just the dunks in transition, although that gets us all excited. It's the vision and feel as a passer. He's a much better ball handler than I gave him credit for. And when he gets ahead of steam and in transition, he is ridiculously hard to stop. I think also, efficiency. I think also Coach K has done a really good job of putting him in positions to get good shots.
After all this talk about him, are you ready to come out and put him as your official number one overall pick in the NBA draft next year?
I knew that was coming. I still go back and forth on it, especially after that game. RJ was so impressive. I actually think that RJ is a much better shooter than his percentage indicates. He shot the ball very well out of the gate this season, had a couple rough stretches from distance, and then was ridiculous shooting the basketball against Virginia. I think he's going to be a very good shooter at the next level. I think it could be a similar situation as Jason Tatum, where he's been a better shooter in the pros than he was in high school. Part of that is I think he has an elite work ethic, and his jump shot is going to continue to get better. That said, I'm probably leaning towards Zion at number one at this point. I think just it's the obvious, the athletic ability, the quick twitch, the strength, the feel, the passing. I think he probably projects a little better as a defender than I also gave him credit for. Just across the board, he has been tremendous. I'm leaning towards him being the number one pick, but I also would say I go back and forth quite a bit, and I think we're a little bit away from making any kind of final decision. That draft's not for a while.
No, certainly. Can you think of one player, though, since your time in the recruiting world, where people have been – I mean, he's just so polarizing. I mean, 2 weeks ago you have Jay-Z show up in Pittsburgh to watch him play. This weekend at Virginia you had LeBron and Rondo come in and watch him play. Is there another recruit that you've ever seen to get this type of publicity? Like, and just I just can't believe it.
Well, I think every year there's a guy that's getting a ton of attention. Last year it was Trae Young. A couple years ago it was the Ben Simmons show. There's always it seems like there's always a freshman that is getting that type of attention. Anthony Davis got that type of attention. John Wall got that type of attention. Maybe it's accelerated with Zion because of the supreme athletic ability, and he's different than all those guys. Honestly, I've said this on the show before. He's different than any player I've ever evaluated, I've ever scouted, I've ever watched. That's why I don't get into comparisons with Zion Williamson, because there's not one. He's different. Yeah. He's different than any player we've ever seen. And you can call him Charles Barkley, or you can be ridiculous and compare him to LeBron, which is unfair and you shouldn't ever do. LeBron and MJ are off limits, by the way. You're not allowed to compare players to them. But he's just different. And he's unlike any player that we've seen. And I think that's part of the reason that he's so excitable.
Yeah, so on the other end of this game, there was the number three Virginia Cavaliers. And, I mean, Virginia has such a good team, too. Tony Bennett just continues to churn out good players, good quality players, and his teams continue to lock down on defense, and they continue to grind out teams and beat you in ways you don't want to get beat, but they go very stagnant on offense sometimes. Could you see this being another opportunity for Virginia to have a quick out in March, or is this team better than what they were last year?
Oh, I think this team is better than they were last year. Obviously, it's an elite defensive team. They've only lost two games this season. It's been to the same team, who I think is the best team in the country. They're 20-2. They're number five in adjusted offensive efficiency. They're number three in adjusted defensive efficiency. This is a team that shoots the ball well. They're ninth in the country at 39.6%. They hold teams to a pretty low percentage from the three-point line. Across the board, I think this team is really good. I'm not going to harp on them for losing to Duke. I mean, like I said a minute ago, they lost to Duke by 10, and Duke played about as well as they could. I think this Virginia team is very good. I don't think this is an early exit team. I think this team has more offense than we've seen Virginia teams have in the past. Look, Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter, Ty Jerome, all three of those guys are shooting above 40% from three. This is a team with a lot of pieces. It's a team that I think has been put together very well, and I don't think they're an early exit team. I think this is, you can make a case this is Tony Bennett's best team.
Yeah, so in that case, do you see Virginia being a one seed when it comes to March then? If they win out, I think they're still a one seed, but or do you see them dropping to a two seed here?
If they win out, they're definitely a one seed, but that would mean they're going to have to go through some ridiculous teams in the ACC tournament. I think there's a lot to play out before we get to that.
Definitely. Now, another team that could be a potential one seed down the line or a two seed. Kentucky had a close win over Mississippi State over the weekend, even though it really shouldn't have been that close. And they were up by 15 at half. I think they were up by 17 or 18 points early in the second half. And then kind of down the stretch, they just kind of really lost that intensity. Now, do you think that it will hurt Kentucky not having a go-to guy down the stretch and just having so many options?
Well, they've had a go-to guy as of late, and it's been P.J. Washington. He's been on an absolute tear lately, and it's really been impressive. I've always been a little up and down on P.J., but there's been a big difference in his game over the past couple weeks, and he's now leading that team in scoring. He's leading them in rebounding. I think he's been awesome, and I think this Kentucky team has been very different since that loss to Seton Hall on December 17th. They lost, I said this on the podcast before, they lost Quade Green. I think they got some identity at the point guard position with Ashton Hagans. He's had some really bright moments, both offensively and defensively, and running the show. Tyler Hero, I think, is maybe the most important piece to this puzzle because of his scoring ability. He's different. Keldon Johnson has been impressive on the wing. But PJ, I think, over the last couple games has really opened some eyes. Four of the last five games, he scored better than 20 points. You could go deeper. Five of the last six games, actually, he scored over 20 points. And he's shooting the ball better than he has his entire career, 44.9% from three. So I think this Kentucky team is really starting to hit their stride. They haven't lost since January 5th when they played at Alabama. And since then, they've won nine straight. And they've got a big weekend coming up. They've got LSU tonight. They've got Tennessee on Saturday. And I think we're going to really figure out where they stand, where this conference stands after this week, Tennessee being 10-0 currently. That's going to be a big showdown and one I'm sure going to be glued in on the TV because I think that game will have a long ways or will give us a lot of information in terms of who's going to win this conference.
Yeah, and I mean, I know I'm going to go back to who's their go-to guy. I know you mentioned P.J. Washington, but I'm asking you straight up, down by a point, 10 seconds left on the clock, who on this Kentucky team is taking that game-winning shot?
Tyler Hero, for sure. That's why I think...
So he's the closer.
Yeah, P.J. Washington's been their best player as of late. I think Tyler Hero is the most important player on that team because of his scoring ability. He's really starting to shoot the ball better too. His three-point percentage is up to 35% after really struggling from the three-point line over the first part of the season. But it's the thing about Tyler Hero, and it's a misconception. When he came in to college, the stereotype, I guess the best way to put it, was that he was a shooter. And yes, he can shoot. But Tyler Hero is much more of a scorer. This is a guy that really scores a lot of points from mid-range, the runners, the floaters, he gets out in transition. I think he's their best scorer. I think if you're not posting up P.J. Washington on the block, you're going to Tyler Hero coming off a screen or making a play towards the rim.
I guess the reason I keep bringing this up, who's the closer on this team, is because to me this is probably the deepest team in college basketball since that platoon squad that Kentucky had in 2014. The one that undefeated, lost to Wisconsin in the Final Four. And I feel like partially the reason that they lost that game in the Final Four was they didn't have anybody that they wanted to go to for the final shots of the game. They played so well as a team that they didn't have anybody. Do you agree that this is the deepest team since that 2014 Kentucky team?
It'd be in the running. The top-tier talent's not the same. But they are
no Devin Booker, no Cat.
Right. There's no guy like that. There's no Cat, there's no Devin Booker, but they're solid across the board. Like we really haven't even talked about Kelvin Johnson, and he's our second leading scorer, averaging 14 points a game. He's shot the ball better than I would have thought he would have coming into the season. Reed Travis has been solid. I kind of disagree with you because I think they have some options late game. It starts with Tyler Hero for me, but you could post PJ up. He's actually, as I mentioned a minute ago, shooting the ball very well. And then there's Keldon Johnson, who is a very good scorer. They don't have that top-tier talent that they had when they won a national championship with Anthony Davis. But they have some really solid pieces, and they're deep. And I think outside of Duke, they have, and I've said this before, they have the highest upside of any team in the country.
Well, I know I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what Kentucky can do down the stretch. But moving on, going to another team that I know a lot of the East Coast probably doesn't get to see a ton of, but I know being out here on the West Coast, I get to watch a lot of great Gonzaga basketball. How good is this Gonzaga team?
I really like this team. It's really unfortunate that we're not going to get to see them at full strength, because I think when you throw Killian Tilly into the equation, who's now out for the season or indefinitely, this is a tremendous basketball team. They're good without him, don't get me wrong. He's only played 9 games this year for them. But I really like this team. It starts with Rui Hachimura, who I think is going to be a top 10 pick in the NBA draft. Very versatile. All the physical tools. Good rebounder. Shooting the ball very well. 45.8% from the three-point line. But there's just good pieces. Josh Perkins is a veteran. He's really setting the table for that basketball team. Zach Norvell is a shot maker. This is a team across the board that I think has a lot of pieces and is going to be there to make a run even without Killian Tilly.
I think Gonzaga is going to lock up a one seed. I don't see anybody being able in their conference to beat them. And speaking of that, through 9 games, the Zags are outscoring their opponents by almost 31 points a game, the most ever in the history of college basketball since 1998. And I think that's even like a 3-point difference even there. I mean, they just beat St. Mary's on Saturday night, 94-46, and St. Mary's used to actually be a team to give them competition, and now it just seems like Gonzaga's hit that upper echelon of they're no longer, in my opinion, like a small school. They play with the big dogs, they beat the big dogs. Do you think that Gonzaga this year is a legitimate national title contender?
Yeah, I do. You can't ever really pick a – it's hard without looking at the bracket, but I do think that they have the talent and the ability to make a run to a Final Four. It's unfortunate, again, that Killian Tilly isn't there, because then I would feel a lot more comfortable with it. But I think this is a tremendous basketball team. They beat Duke earlier in the season. I think the one interesting thing, and it's something that we talk about pretty regularly with Gonzaga, is it's been a little bit since they've been tested. And you mentioned that point differential where they're just blasting teams. But I think this team has so many quality pieces. It's got good leadership. It's got shot makers. And they shoot, as a team, 38% clip from three. There's top-tier talent like Rui Hachimura. I think this is a Final Four caliber basketball team.
So real quick, who's your Final Four now that Kansas has basically eliminated themselves with injuries? Who's your Final Four?
That's a great question. I mean, I'm going to start with Duke, because I think they're the, as I mentioned, the best team in the country with the highest upside, and I think Kentucky. So those would be my first two. I'm going to go Virginia as well. We discussed them a minute ago. I think that they're that caliber of basketball team. And the fourth one, you know, I'm going to probably get hated on for just going all chalk, but I think I probably would go Gonzaga.
Wow. Going on a limb, man. Like to see it.
I mean, if you're going to ask me to pick my Final Four teams, I'm going to pick the four teams that I think are the best.
No, I got you. I got you. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, I've watched quite a few Gonzaga games this year, and do you think it'd be crazy to say that even if Gonzaga played in the Pac-12, they could go undefeated in conference play?
That's not crazy. No, not from what we've seen with the Pac-12 this year. And I think that, you know, Washington or Arizona State would, UCLA could, you know, or I mean, USC could, like, give them a game and maybe steal one. But, you know, if you're comparing Gonzaga to the Pac-12 right now, I would say Gonzaga would be the best team in that league. So I don't think that's crazy or anything out of line.
Yeah, no, all right, we're going to stick with the Pac-12 for a second, and just a second only, because I feel like they don't deserve that much time in this situation. But what is up with the Pac-12? Like, that used to be my late-night feed for basketball, and now it's almost hard to watch.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, obviously Arizona's gone through a lot the past year. Arizona State has been up and down. They've certainly had some bright moments in the first part of the season. But outside of that, you know, Washington has probably been the biggest bright spot, or has been. But outside of that, it's been tough sledding for the entire league. Very unpredictable, I think, too, is the biggest thing. It's, you know, there's games that that you think are going to go one way and they go the other, and it's been pretty consistently that way throughout the entire conference play.
Yeah, I thought Washington was the real deal coming out of the Pac-12. I mean, they had a very lackluster game at Arizona State on Saturday night, but ASU is a very tough place to play at. They have a very hostile crowd when they show up to games, as I know ASU fans know about now. So what has been the big difference with Mike Hopkins' philosophy, bringing in these five-star kids and bringing in these big-time recruits out to Washington? And do you think that Washington can be a legit contender for years to come with him?
Well, those five-star kids aren't there yet, but they're coming, Conrad, and getting a guy in Isaiah Stewart was a big deal. And I'd be curious to see if they're able to snag Jaden McDaniels as well, who's another five-star prospect actually ranked in the top five. But this is a really good recruiting class that Mike Hopkins has put together with Raekwon Battle and Marcus Shonis. You know, this is a really good class, and it ranks 20 nationally. If they were able to get Jaden McDaniels, it really accentuate things. But Mike Hopkins has done a very good job with that basketball team, and this is a guy that's been known for his ability to recruit as an assistant back to his Syracuse days, and has really strong ties and connections, and that's how he's able to get Isaiah Stewart from his days back in upstate New York, and that relationship paid off.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did. I mean, for them, for the Huskies to be able to pull in some five-star kids, and for them not to be from the West Coast even, I mean, to get East Coast kids all the way out to Washington, that's absolutely tremendous. Last thing on Washington, are they the only team from the Pac-12 that's going to make the tournament this year?
Well, if the tournament were to be selected today, I think they'd probably be the only team selected. Still a long ways to play out, but yeah, as of today, I think that it would be just UW. Conrad, man, I appreciate you jumping on the podcast. It was fun to rap, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, man, I did too. Have a good one.
That was Conrad Company. Before I let you guys go, I want to make sure that you are subscribed and supporting the Sidelines podcast. The best way to do that is to shoot over to Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button for me. Leave a rating. Leave a review. You can also shoot me a note over on Twitter or Instagram. The handle is @EvanDaniels. As always, thanks for listening and have a great week.